There is such a undertone of distrust in the recruiting industry right now. A lot of it has to do with the scammy messages that are coming in. A lot of it has to do with the reputation from a long time ago. One of the big complaints that I hear is you send that connection request of, hey, let's connect. And then 2 seconds later, you get this 3-paragraph message about why you should spend $30K on me. You know, you're just another message. It's really trying to elevate the whole recruiting industry that we are legit and we are good. Most of us are good, while also building those relationships of trust.
Many recruiters dream about freedom, the freedom to travel, to work from anywhere, to design life on their own terms. Well, today's guest, Lauren Fernandez, didn't just dream it, she did it.
Life is short. And, you know, it's one of those things that people always talk about. Oh, man, I wish I could have an RV, or I wish I could go travel more. Or I wish. And so, you know, thankfully, not everybody has this opportunity, but we had the opportunity and the timing lined up correct, you know, right. And we're like, we can't pass this up. This is going to be one of those things that we'll regret.
By the age of 28, Lauren had already achieved what many consider to be the pinnacle of success. Starting a company with her husband, scaling it to over 100 employees across 3 states, and ultimately selling the business. But where do you go from there?
One day, we were both just like, we're not ready to settle down and move into a house yet. Starlink, the Elon Musk internet, had just come out. And we're like, we could literally work from anywhere now. So why don't we rejoin forces? Let's start our own recruiting agency and let's buy an RV and let's travel the country. Let's see our clients because we work on a national level and go see the world while we're working.
For Lauren and her husband, the answer was to launch a recruiting business from an RV, crisscrossing the country to serve clients while embracing a life of adventure. Along the way, she's faced incredible challenges, including supporting her husband through a serious health diagnosis.
The nice thing about, again, what we do, and this could be a whole nother podcast I could go off about the opportunities of recruiting, but the nice thing is we are able to adjust for those different seasons in life and for what those different successes are. Is your company and is your career the tool to get you that success, or is your company the success? You know, is it the means to the end, or is it the end?
In this episode, you'll hear the unfiltered truth about life as a digital nomad and why success is less about chasing goals and more about defining what truly matters. So, Lauren, tell me something about your childhood and growing up that will help me understand who you are today.
So without going way, way, way too into the weeds, kind of the short summary, I grew up in a small town in Wisconsin. I like to say that I grew up in the middle of a cornfield because I did. So I came from very much that agricultural background. I was actually homeschooled. And then my dad commuted an hour and a half to Milwaukee for work every day. So he worked in that corporate world, but yet we still kind of lived in that kind of American rural world, which is a cool combination. And for some reason, I was a weird kid. And so I know it. And I always had the two obsessions that I had were, one, I always wanted to start my own business. I tried selling rocks on the side of the road. I don't know why nobody wanted to buy my rocks. But I was always trying to invent things. I was always trying to start a business. I tried to get my dad to buy me stock at 10. But for some reason, he said 10-year-olds aren't allowed to, you know, invest in stocks. But the other question I always had was, you go into the city and there's all these big, tall buildings. What are the people doing in those buildings? And then when I found out that there's multiple businesses in those buildings, I was like, well, how are there so many businesses? What are they doing? How are these people getting jobs? How are they employed? And so I guess, you know, getting into recruiting was very natural.
Absolutely. That makes total sense to me. Where did this entrepreneurial spark come from that started in such a young age, though?
I really don't know. I think I was, you know, sometimes you're just born with things. I mean, I was trying to wheel and deal my whole life, apparently.
So. Okay, fantastic. And so fast forward, how did you get into recruiting?
Just like everybody else, I kind of fell into it. I didn't realize that it was a thing. Back in 2014, right after my husband and I got married, we ended up moving to Florida. and we started a third-party sales and marketing company. Our clients were like DirecTV, AT&T. We handled a lot of like their sales, their customer service, that kind of thing. And my responsibility was all the internal recruiting for that. And then I did a lot of like the HR and the ops side as well. And so that's kind of where I naturally fell into recruiting. We had the company for a few years. We ended up growing it from just the two of us to having over 100 employees in three different states.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah. And it was a really cool opportunity because, you know, for us, it was very important to bring people in and invest in them so that they could reach the next level of their career. And so a lot of the people we'd bring in as entry level, we would teach them the, you know, the whys behind the whats of business. And then they would continue to grow out. That's how we got, you know, all the different locations. But doing that, recruiting, because obviously not every person you recruit stays. So the amount of reps that you had to do in order to get a sustainable 100-person business really just got me into, you know, human psychology of what works, what doesn't work, what are people actually looking for. Yes, our business is great, but it's not great for everybody.
Yes.
And then when streaming started to becoming really big, you know, obviously things like AT&T, DirecTV, the cable, it was going down. So we ended up selling the business. And I was like, well, I'm really good at recruiting, so I'll apply for a recruiting job. And so I ended up working, applying to and working with a very well-known agency in the Fort Lauderdale area. My thought was, if I want to find the right company to work for, the best way to do it is to recruit for the companies that are hiring, so I know which is the best company so I can go get myself a job.
Was the original plan. Makes logical sense.
Right? But, you know, after about a year, I really got into more of like the formal agency side of recruiting. I was working a 360 desk, learning about the business development, realized that I'm pretty good at business development and I really love business development. But then another opportunity opened up to go work as the director of operations for an interior design company.
Okay, wow, that's different.
I know, right? And I was like, well, I have the ops background, so, you know, why not? And so I went and did that, and that put me back into the inside of recruiting, so recruiting for teams internally again.
Okay, wow.
I know.
What were you about to say?
I was going to say, then after that, I worked for an agency for a short time before starting Palmco Staffing.
Okay, wow. So it was a bit of a roundabout journey, but take me back to how I can see a common thread that weaves through the whole pattern here. Take me back to building that first business with your husband, though. So how old were you when you sold it?
This is a hard question. How old was I? 28.
Wow. That's
crazy.
Yeah,
I think I was like 28.
So you grew and sold a company by the age of 28 with 100 employees. Explain to me again what you were doing. It was direct sales. So it was a call center, like outbound call center for telecommunications companies?
Yes. Yeah. So a lot of those companies back then, and I would assume still now, what they would do is they would outsource a lot of their customer service work. So their sales and, you know, like their customer service calling in with problems, they would outsource it to smaller companies like ours to handle it, partly so they don't have quite such a large overhead.
Okay. That makes sense. And so, how did you win those customers?
A lot of
those
networking.
Those are big accounts.
I know. Yeah. It's one of those things that, without going into too much detail, once you got in it, you got them. You could get leads and things.
So. Makes sense. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I guess once you're in it. So how many people do you think you, because to hire 100 people, you must have, with turnover, you must have hired hundreds of people.
Oh, hundreds.
How many people do you think you've hired?
Oh, definitely over the thousand, definitely.
Wow.
In the thousands. Yeah, because what we would be doing, because I mean, it's sales and it was definitely much more of an entry level role.
Okay.
And so, you know, the turnover was there. And I think we would do, the goal was to have 20 interviews a week scheduled. And then.
So, what, like 4 a day, basically?
Yes. Yeah. Something like that. And then we had really good retention. So most of the people actually showed up for the interviews. And then, you know, out of that 20 a week, we would have, you know, one or two that actually started.
Okay. So about 10% of the people who you interviewed would start.
It was usually more than that, but...
What did you learn from that business that you think is transferable over to A, recruitment, but also B, just running a successful business in other, like in the recruiting industry?
I think what's really important, and one of the things that I've taken, themes that I've taken from then, is understanding that success looks different for different people at different times. Just because you have a really great opportunity and your company is really great, or, you know, more applicable to what we do, our client's opportunity is really great. It doesn't mean that it's the right position for that person at that time. And so being able to, when you're having those interviews and you're screening those candidates, get past just the bullet points on the resume and the canned phrases that we all have learned to say, and really understand what is this person, what does success look like to them? Where are they in their life? You know, are they somebody who is in personal production, who just loves to hit the sales numbers? Or are they somebody who's a little bit more team oriented and is maybe not as good at hitting sales numbers, but is really good at rallying a team and putting those different personalities and strengths together to create a winning team?
Cool. That makes sense to me. So what does success look like to you at this point?
Success to me is I want to leave the world a better place than, you know, I found it. And I want Palm Coast Staffing to be an outreach of that. So every time I have a conversation with a client, every time I have a conversation with a candidate, I want them to walk away better than I found them. So even if that is just a little bit lighter and a recommendation to a restaurant because I couldn't help them any other way, then, you know, that's what it is. But it's about building those long-term relationships, being that go-to person that people can, you know, that they'll send me a referral. They'll be like, hey, yeah, reach out to Lauren. She knows somebody. She may not be able to help you, but she'll get you in touch with the person who can help you.
Awesome. That resonates for me for sure. So we got up to the point in your story where you started the business, but you opted to do it completely differently. Can you tell the story about launching Palm Coast Staffing?
Shortly after we sold our business, my husband went the route of, because he had a background in marketing and social media. So he went that route. He ended up becoming the head of marketing for a couple of law firms here in Florida. I continued on the recruiting route, ended up getting into legal recruiting. At one point, we decided to buy a house because that's what all good adults are supposed to do, is buy a house. And so we were, you know, getting ready to buy our house. And then one day we were both just like, we're not ready to settle down and move into a house yet. Starlink, the Elon Musk internet, had just come out. And we're like, we could literally work from anywhere now. So why don't we rejoin forces? Let's start our own recruiting agency. And let's buy an RV and let's travel the country. Let's see our clients, because we work on a national level. Let's go see our clients in our RV and go see the world while we're working.
Wow, that's a wild idea. So when was this, Lauren?
It was in 2022.
Okay. So only a few years ago. So where did that inspiration come from? Like this idea of let's travel around the country and you know, while we run this business.
Life is short. And you know, it's one of those things that people always talk about. Oh man, I wish I could have an RV, or I wish I could go travel more, or I wish. And so, you know, thankfully, not everybody has this opportunity, but we had the opportunity and the timing lined up correct, you know, right. And we're like, we can't pass this up. This is going to be one of those things that we'll regret. if we don't seize the opportunity. So
amazing. Okay, so it sounds glamorous, like the digital nomad and work from anywhere. But what's the reality? Because I'm sure there's downsides as well.
The reality is, yeah, I know it is. The whole digital nomad thing is definitely glamorized. I mean, there's always the tropical pictures of the nice drink and the laptop by the pool. And it sounds wonderful. And entrepreneurship is the same way. You know, everybody always says the highlight reel. So obviously, owning your own business and traveling just has to be the most perfect thing in the world.
Absolutely. That's the ultimate.
It's great. No, it is. It really has been a great opportunity. It's something I definitely don't regret at all. But what people don't talk about is you do work for yourself. So that means you work as much as you want to work. And there isn't anybody telling you that, you know, hey, you need to go hit those KPIs. Hey, you need to make those numbers, you know? The great thing is if you want to go on a hike on a Thursday afternoon because the sun is out, you can go on a hike on a Thursday afternoon when the sun is out, whether you should or you shouldn't. Okay. And so having that, if you struggle with self-discipline, if you struggle with schedules, if those are things that are harder for you, going remote and being a digital nomad is not going to fix that problem. There's all sorts of unforeseen circumstances that are going to come up, just like, you know, living in an RV. When we were in Oklahoma, we ran out, the internet went out because it was raining and I had calls, you know, and I was out in the middle of nowhere. There's no internet. And when Starlink went out, there was nothing. And so, you know, how do you handle those unforeseen circumstances? Or, you know, one point we were driving, I had a call, but we got a flat tire. So do I cancel the call? Do I take the call on the side of the road? You know, it's like, it's all those kinds of things.
Which one did you do?
Oh, I took the call, obviously.
Okay, obviously. Great.
Obviously.
Side of the road. Man, I've got a mental picture. So Lauren, how do you structure your life and your work in order to be productive while also enjoying the flexibility of being able to go hiking or whatever? Like, there must be habits or a discipline that you've put around that.
Yeah. So I think the biggest thing is, and I know mentality is a big thing that, you know, we all talk about and time structure. And for me, because you can go both ways, right? You can always feel like you've never done enough and there's always more to do. And it's 11 o'clock at night and you're spinning your wheels and you're just like, but then you can also go to the other side and you're like, woohoo, you know, let's just go hiking today. I have no calls. This is great. So what I try to do is I structure my day. I break it up into three different sections. And the sections are kind of interchangeable. Because I don't want my schedule to be so tight that if one thing goes off, the whole schedule's been derailed. Because that's not practical. You can't keep up with that. So what I try to do is I break my day up into three sections. I have my business development section, I have my recruiting section, and I have my other section. I still use a old-fashioned paper calendar and a pen. I still have my everything online, but I still use my old-fashioned. I need to be able to check it off. It doesn't happen if I don't check it off. And what I do is I put the priorities for that day. Sometimes it's, you know, something that's on Monday that needs to be followed up on Wednesday. I'll put it on the business development section. And so when I get to Wednesday, I look at it and I see all these things that these are the things that I must accomplish today in my business development section, my recruiting section, and my other, because when you run your own business, there's a lot in the other section.
Okay.
And so when I get all those things checked off, I know I've finished for the day.
But okay, I have so many questions. First of all, I like that you have a physical, like you're writing things down in this. What
it's like
is
a planner.
It?
It's just like a planner. It's a planner.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's one that has like the big, they're like this big, the sections per day. So you can definitely write in it.
Okay. Fantastic. And is that a planner you just bought like, or one you created, or
no? It's on Amazon.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
it's like 11 bucks on Amazon.
Great,
it's an 11 by 12 planner.
So it's not so much the planner, but you've created your own system for using that planner with these three sections.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And are you doing those three things every day?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Fantastic.
Yep. And I mean, it varies depending, you know, did I just get a new client and I have a bunch of jobs? Which one's going to be heavier than the other one? Or, you know, am I kind of getting to the end of a search? Things are getting a little stale. Do I need to bump up the business development? So it kind of varies depending on what I'm doing. But each day I am doing some sort of business development. I am doing some sort of recruiting. I'm doing some sort of other activity that needs to happen administrative wise.
That makes sense. I don't know if you heard my interview with Jenny Diaz, but she was also talking about having a physical planner and the like, to help her mentally feel organized. Then she wants to be able to write it down, to be able to see it, to check things off. Actually, I was on a call with one of our clients, Rebecca Hastings, yesterday. What she's done, Lauren, is she went in Canva and designed her own planner, and then she's printed it out. But she's actually going to get it, like get a hardbound like planner like this printed with her own, like exactly how she wants it. So tell me about, what are the things for you that fall in like the business development activities? Let's talk about that first. What have been the most effective things that go in there?
Yes. I mean, business development, it is a big bucket, just like the recruiting bucket is a big bucket. So some days it's actual outreach. Some days it's following up with, you know, clients. Hey, I sent you this candidate. What are we thinking? So it's basically anything client related goes in my business development section, because every time you're touching a client, technically it's business development because you're continuing to build that relationship with your client.
That makes sense.
And then, so, you know, sometimes it'll be like an NPC email or, you know, whatever the case may be. And then on the recruiting side, same kind of thing. You know, am I sending out the good luck on your interview text messages? Do I have candidate screens? Usually in there, that's where I'll put which roles I'm working on for the week. So I can easily look back and go, okay, yeah, I worked on that one that day. I need to go back and look at this one again and see what the responses were. So I can keep things warm. That's usually how I schedule it.
That makes sense. And what about the other? What types of things fall in there?
Other will be anything operations related. So I actually put networking calls in my other section. but other will be anything like if I need to work on social media posts, if I need to have a call with the accountant, if, you know, any of those other operational things that need to be done that are not strictly related to clients or candidates.
Fantastic. I like this. You've got a system. I think that's the key, is like to be successful, you have to follow a system, and you've created the system that works for you. So that'll make sense. And I know our listeners love kind of to get tactical as much as possible. What for you is the most effective business development strategy?
I know I'm supposed to say cold calling.
No, there's no supposed to. I'm genuinely curious to know what it is for you. Look, I've learned that there's lots of ways of doing this. And, you know, I want to know what, not what you're supposed to do, but what you actually do that gets results.
Okay. So my theory is you need to go find people where they are, whether it is your clients or whether it is your candidates. And each industry is going to be a little bit different. So there's some industries where everybody's on LinkedIn. It's a very LinkedIn heavy activity, you know, place. And then there's going to be other industries where they're like, LinkedIn? What? No, I've never created one of those. So I don't think it's going to be for business development or recruiting. I don't think it is cut and dry anymore, especially with all the different avenues that have been given to us. For me, I do, it's a lot of long-term approach. And so a lot of my clients, especially this year, a lot of my clients have been people that I have met at conferences. It has been different networking events. It's building those long-term relationships so that when I have that right person, then it's time to go. And so you're constantly nurturing it. So it's almost like you're creating one of those overnight, once in a lifetime success stories. But what it's really took me 3 years to get to this point. Now, obviously, we don't have the luxury to do that all of the time. And so sometimes you do actually have to aggressively go out there and get new business. And so I will also, I do a lot of NPCing still on email and on LinkedIn. So typically I'll send out a LinkedIn first, kind of build that list off of LinkedIn. I'll put them into a roll-up. So I have all their email addresses. So I'm kind of working at the same time. If I don't get any responses on the LinkedIn, I send the same, tweak it a little bit, but I send the same general thing in an email. If I think that it's a really, really good fit, then I will call them as well.
Okay.
But it, and a lot, yeah. And then a lot of it's also just being, because a lot of my clients are on LinkedIn. So, you know, it's liking their stuff, commenting on their stuff. Anytime that I can get my name, even if it's subconsciously in front of them, it's working towards that final close.
Awesome. So far there's a tripod. There's in-person events. So networking events, conferences, there's NPC approaches, and then there's engaging on social media like LinkedIn, supporting their content, liking, commenting, and that sort of thing. Super interesting. Anything else that moves the needle, or are those the kind of top three?
Those are the main ones that we use. Because when I call people, it's a semi-warm call. I want them to know who I am when I'm calling. So that's typically how we do business development.
It's really interesting, Lauren, because what you've just shared mirrors pretty much what we're hearing from our clients as well. Like, where are you getting business this year? What's working for you? And the couple of things that come up over and over again, one is in-person events. And it's almost, I think that's become really important post-COVID, that it's, people are gravitating to that. And I think, especially because the volume of outreach is like unprecedented, right?
Oh, we're getting inundated. It's
exactly
ridiculous.
So people are inundated by emails, LinkedIn messages and stuff. So actually seeing someone in person at an event is really effective. Now it's higher friction. It takes more effort, right, than sending a bunch of emails. But I think there's disproportionate return on those things that are hard to scale, that require more time, effort, energy, money to be able to do them. How often are you going to like networking events or industry events for lawyers?
I try to hit a couple every year, and I try to go to the same ones every year.
That makes
sense.
Say why you're going to the same ones.
Because whenever you go someplace new, nobody knows who you are. And so you kind of have to start all over again. But if I'm going to the same conferences every year, people start recognizing my face.
Yes, exactly. And they see it's Lauren Fernandez again. And you're there time and time again, which builds your brand and gets people to know, like, and trust you. And also they know you're serious, right? You're not just a recruiter who randomly came to an event one time, but you're serious about this industry because you keep coming back.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the way I look at it is when you go to the conferences, it's such a great opportunity because you get to see your targets in sort of their natural setting. So it's almost like being a scientist on the Galapagos Islands, right? You go there, and you study them. Like, how are they interacting with each other? You know, what are they saying about the industry? What are they complaining about over cocktails? What are, you know, like for attorneys, anybody listening to this that recruits for attorneys, they know that they are the most high functioning, distracted individuals that you will ever meet. You go to a conference, they've got their laptops up, they're sending emails, they're researching things, they've got their phones, they're having side conversations. Somehow they're still listening to the presenter and able to like comment on that as well. So if I send an attorney this really long, beautiful worded NPC or, you know, submittal, they're not going to read it. They don't care. They don't have time. They've got two sentences. So it's learning your people, which is a great way to, you know, thing to do at conferences, and then tailoring your approach to your people and studying.
Beautifully
them.
Said. I've never heard lawyers compared to turtles before, but okay. That's funny. I 100%, you need to really understand your avatar or your ideal client profile and really deeply immerse yourself in their world. You know, how do they think? What's important to them? How do they communicate? What are their problems or frustrations or pain points? What are they trying to achieve? What do they desire, et cetera? And even the communication style, like you mentioned. So then let's say that's a good segue to talk about the NPCs then. So would you say that law is a candidate-driven market? Like if you find a great attorney, then you can find them an interview?
For the most part, yes, I would say that. Attorneys tend to be the production of a law firm. So they're not a salesperson, but they are the revenue driving production of a law firm. Depending on the size of the law firm and what their revenue for the year looks like, a lot of times if I have a really good candidate, especially if they have a portable book that they can bring with them, then they're going to be very desirable. If they don't, it's a really good example of the quality of people that I work with that they will remember for later.
Got it. Yeah, that makes sense. So you initially you've got your target list of potential firms that may be interested in your candidate, and you're reaching out on LinkedIn. Are you like already connected, or like you mentioned that brevity is important here. What's the kind of overall approach on those LinkedIn messages?
So it depends. It depends if the law firm has a position that's already open that I actually have a client or a candidate for, or if I'm just reaching out for future things later on. Success is a multi-pronged fork that is jabbed repeatedly over and over again. So there's not one specific way of doing things.
I like your analogies. Non-traditional.
They are non-traditional.
Yeah, but they're very vivid. So
yeah. So there's not one. All that to say, there's not one specific message that I'm just going to be hammering home over and over again. I'm going to send out messages to my target profile law firm if they've got an open job open. And it's going to be something like, "Hey, I've got this candidate. I saw your position's open." Da 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 da. If they don't have anything open, but there's still a target law firm and they're a decision maker, it may just be, "Hey, I'd love to connect. Saw that you also went to, grew up in Wisconsin, go Packers." but it's then they're in my system for later. Now they're going to start seeing my content. Now I'm going to start seeing theirs. I had a call with a potential client 2 or 3 weeks ago. And they were like, "Hey, Lauren, I'm so glad that you finally reached out. We run in the same circles. I've seen you comment on this stuff. It's been 2 years. We haven't talked. Let's get the partners in here. Let's have a conversation. This is what we're looking to do in this state."
Awesome.
And I mean, I have not reached out to them to do business with them for 2 years because I was just letting it percolate because it wasn't the right time yet.
Okay. So then that leads to the third part, which you mentioned was being very intentional and strategic with what you're doing on LinkedIn. So what's your strategy there?
I am working on growing my LinkedIn. It's a work in progress.
Okay.
Definitely have not perfected it yet. You've had many a guest on here that go look at their LinkedIn's, not mine. But what I am trying to do is there is such, and I'm pretty sure everybody listening to this will agree, there is such a undertone of distrust in the recruiting industry right now. A lot of it has to do with the scammy messages that are coming in. A lot of it has to do with the reputation from a long time ago. One of the big complaints that I hear is you send that connection request of, "Hey, let's connect." And then 2 seconds later, you get this 3-paragraph message about why you should spend $30,000 on me. and you know, you're just another message. So it's really trying to elevate the whole recruiting industry that we are legit and we are good. Most of us are good. While also building those relationships of trust long term, like, hey, you actually know Lauren. This is what she believes in. A lot of times, I'll just put up a simple quote about leadership. I've started videos. I have been listening to the podcast. So I have started videos.
Good for you. Awesome.
Yes, because I know they're important. And so it's just building that trust so that when I do reach out to them, they know that I am a real person. When I do see them at the conference, you know, I've already been building that framework of trust that I am a human and I actually have their best intent in mind.
Absolutely. Love it.
If that answers your question. It was kind of a long rounded.
No, that was useful. Do you have like a habit or a kind of daily ritual in terms of like how long do you spend on LinkedIn with like engaging with content or posting your own stuff?
It depends. I definitely try to do a solid hour block of interacting with people. I mean, you get so many views when you comment on other people's stuff, and it's so easy to do.
Yeah.
And so you start, because you don't always need to generate your own posts. But if you can just like piggyback on somebody else's, as long as it's not the automated, great thoughts, 100% agree.
But if you
actually do a short paragraph, obviously tag the author in it so it doesn't get lost in the noise, people are going to see your name and they're going to associate you with being a thought leader in the industry, not just a recruiter that wants you to pay them $30,000 for a supposed candidate that may or may not exist.
It's so interesting, Lauren, because I've done a couple of podcast interviews already today before we had the privilege of speaking. And my last guest, Greg Fisher, was talking about he uses commenting on LinkedIn as a core business development strategy, and he's developed a whole kind of methodology around it. And that's how I learned about him, was he was commenting on my stuff. I think, and this is something I don't do. I'm very random at the moment. Like whatever I happen to see, one of my clients or someone I know, and I'll comment. But I think this is the direction to go, is definitely be more intentional about what you're commenting and why. So kudos to you. Go ahead.
You have to be careful too, because you can go down the LinkedIn rabbit hole. And you know it, you've spent 3 hours, and 3 hours is probably not productive.
Probably too much. Yeah, probably. My goal is 30 minutes. If I can do 30 minutes a day of, you know, then that's, I think that
it takes me a long time to write stuff. So, you know.
Fair enough. Awesome. So looking back over, so you're now 3 years in to the whole
3 years.
Mm-hmm. And are you still in the RV and doing that whole thing, or like what's the current setup?
Yeah. So we don't RV full time anymore. I recently, a couple months ago, actually just moved into a condo here. So I'm now overlooking the ocean, which is pretty great. Back in 2020, so we've been doing it for about a year and a half. My husband got diagnosed with an autoimmune disease called myositis. And which was crazy because we'd been hiking, you know, 4 or 5 miles a day, 12 on the weekend. We were in the mountains. We were, you know, very active. So it kind of came out of nowhere. But it was it's a degenerative disease that affects your structural muscle. And so we had to come back to Florida so that he could regularly be seen by doctors. He ended up with stage 3 heart failure from it. So it's been kind of a busy year. But we're working on being on the mends or a little bit more stable. So we downsized to a smaller RV. And right now, next year, next summer, we're planning our big trip up to Alaska. So we're going to go from Florida to Alaska next year.
That sounds epic. So first of all, I'm so sorry that you guys are going through that. That sounds very stressful. And makes total sense why you want a home base where you can, you know, you're not on the road all the time. How can you work and focus and do stuff with that going on? That must be extremely challenging.
It is. I mean, it has been. But at the same time, I mean, if you have no money, stress, there's a lot more stresses. And really, honestly, because of what we do and because it is just the two of us right now, sometimes I'll pull in some contractors from, you know, for some of the roles that we're working on. We do have a lot of flexibility. That is the beauty of recruiting and why I love recruiting so much and the industry as a whole, because there is so much opportunity here for people. We have that flexibility to, you know, take an RV across the country. I have the flexibility because it is smaller. Obviously, if you have a much larger organization, it's a little bit different with the whole ops of running that. But we have the flexibility to kind of adjust as need be and prioritize, which is partly why I have my structure the way I have it. So I can adjust as needed depending on what is going on. But growing up, I don't know if my dad meant it as a blessing or as a curse, but one summer he made us memorize a quote by Winston Churchill, which is basically, it's no use saying you're doing your best. You have to succeed in doing what is necessary.
Mm.
And so every time I decide to get a little bit lazy and go, I'm doing my best, that quote pops up and I'm like, all right, fine.
That's a great one.
Yeah. It's a really good one.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, you know, it's really, you know, prioritizing, it's time management. It's being flexible. I think one of the great things post COVID, it's people are a little bit more human now.
Yes.
We don't have to put on that fake facade of being uber professional. I mean, obviously I did not put a blazer on today for our call. And so going through, because there's been a couple times where we've been in the hospital for, you know, unexpectedly for a week or more with that going on.
Oh my God.
I take calls in between. I mean, there's a lot of staring at empty walls while you're in a hospital. I don't know how much time people spend there, but there's a lot of boring, empty time as well. So I could be sitting there fretting or I could be getting something done. I do, you know, actually this last couple months ago when he was in the hospital, I submitted a candidate who just hit his 90 days.
All right.
I negotiated the salary for another one. And I had a random firm that reached out to me who was doing, they were just getting ready to do their recruitment process. They wanted to call some recruiters to see what was up. I took the call because, I mean, that was cool. And then they became a client. So if I had stopped working that week, I think about all the revenue that I would have missed out on.
Right.
And so it's just channeling because of what we get to do and the flexibility of the time, being able to channel maybe those stresses into something productive, if
Absolutely.
That makes sense.
Wow. What you guys, you've packed a lot. You've had a lot of life in a short, I mean, I don't know how old you are, but you look very young.
And, 35.
35, okay.
2 weeks ago.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
But you've had so many experiences and done so many different things. What, you know, since you have had your own business, what advice would you have for others who are thinking about starting their own business?
I would say the lows are never as low as you think they are, but the highs are not as high as you think they are either. And, you need to remember why you're doing what you're doing. If it's just for money, you're going to get tired because especially in recruiting, there's a lot of ups and downs. And so you need to understand the ups and downs of those markets. And when you're having a really good up, start, you know, saving the hay for when there's a famine. Especially when you're a small business. Again, it's a little bit different when you're structured and you're larger. But reach out to people. I mean, there's a lot of, even just with your podcast, there's so many good people in this network. You know, have a buddy, reach out to them, an accountability partner, if you will, that'll help you stay on track. Everybody's allowed to quit for 5 minutes, but you got to come back. I mean, it really is a mentality thing, and just knowing what your why is.
What's your why?
My why is...
You kind of said it.
It is kind of cliche, but it really is to leave the world a better place. There's a poem. I think it's "What Is Success?" might be the poem.
Okay. I don't know that one.
It is. Okay. It is "If" by Rudyard Kipling.
Oh, okay. I know this one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That one is my why. That is one of my favorite poems. So everybody should go find it, put it in the show notes, read it, memorize it. It's a really good one. And that is why I do what I do.
Amazing. Rudyard Kipling had some good stuff. He was also the who, what, why, when, where guy, the 5 W's. Any other challenges that you've had to navigate that you're open to sharing today, Lauren?
I mean, the health one has been a big one, especially since we had just started the company. And he's, you know, 50% of the company. So kind of navigating that, because, you know, when we first started, we were both working 360, handling business development and handling the recruiting. So adjusting for that has been a big thing. And then just, you know.
Sorry, I'm just going to ask. So is he able to work, or is it more or less you're the revenue generator now?
It depends on the day. And okay. So what we've kind of switched to, because there's some days where he's really tired and, you know, we're not able to do a whole lot. And then there's other days he's, you know, at 100% and really good. And so what we've kind of adjusted to, which seems to be working pretty well for us right now, is he does a lot of the sourcing, because sourcing can be done anytime. And, you know, if you have a scheduled call and you can't do the scheduled call, that's more of a problem. So I handle all of the calls and things. Also, sourcing is not my favorite thing in the whole world. It's not. So it works out really well for us, because he handles all of the sourcing and then I handle all of the screenings and everything from there. And then he'll handle a lot of the operations side as far as like accounting and things like that. So it's been a good
that
division.
That sounds like an ideal way of splitting things down. Any other adjustments that you guys have had to make in order to, you know, manage his illness and everything?
I mean, a lot of it's just being realistic, because both of us are very much type A, very goal-driven people. I mean, we've packed a lot in. We've been married for 11 years. We've packed a lot into 11 years. And so just kind of adjusting and realizing what is an absolute and what is a nice to have. You know, it's kind of the same. The scenario that I use is, I would like to climb Mount Everest, but I have no desire to climb Mount Everest.
Okay.
You know, like I would love to say that I did it, but I have no desire to do it. So I'm not going to spend the rest of my life beating myself up for the fact that I never climbed it and wishing that I had, because realistically, I know I would like to say I did it, but I have zero desire to actually do
right.
it. So it's figuring out, you know, would I like to grow Palm Coast Staffing into a huge, gigantic company? Maybe. But am I going to be okay with being successful with just the two of us? Yes. So it's kind of taking away that guilt of, you know.
That's so interesting to really get clarity on what are the things that will be nice to have or to accomplish or to do or experience versus what are the things that are... you absolutely must, that you're committed to, that you are going to find a way to create, and not getting those confused, right? And then feeling bad or beating yourself up that you didn't achieve whatever it was, because that, I think a lot of us carry around goals that aren't really what we truly want deep down. There's things we think we should have or want, or things that we've like, whether through growing up or society or whatever, right? We get this almost pre-installed set of goals that we aspire to, but is that really what you want? Figuring out what you really want, I think that's what you're saying, right? What do we really want? What's most important?
Yeah, well, and it goes back to that whole success looks different at different times, you know? Same with our candidates, it's the same way with us. Maybe right now you're in the building phase and, you know, you don't have a lot of external responsibilities and you can work 12 to 12 or, you know, 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, and you can grind it out. And, you know, that is success for you because you're building those building blocks. But maybe in a few years from now, you've got a couple of kids and success is having that freedom to spend time with those kids while they're young, because they're only young once. And so it's adjusting. The nice thing about, again, what we do, and this could be a whole nother podcast I could go off about the opportunities of recruiting. But the nice thing is we are able to adjust for those different seasons in life and for what those different successes are. Is your company and is your career the tool to get you that success? Or is your company the success? You know, is it the means to the end or is it the end? And those are two very different things, even though you're technically going through the same motions.
Absolutely, 100%. Lauren, it seems like your dad had quite a big influence on you. You've mentioned him a couple of times now. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, I mean, so my dad, he's a great guy. And the older that I get, the more, as most kids do, the more I appreciate him. So he's always been in the corporate world. He would drive when growing up, he would drive an hour and a half every day into the city, to go work in his job. But then he would come home at night because we were homeschooled and I was not the brightest tool in the shed. So he would come home and he'd have to like reteach me math and reteach me English. And, you know, so he would do that. And then he was also during the weekends, he was also a pastor. So I don't know how he found so much time to do all the things that he did and to do it well. Because I know how much I do and I don't have any kids and I'm already exhausted.
Yeah, no kidding.
And I don't drive an hour and a half every day. He's always just been a really, really good example of, and he doesn't like to brag about it, but, you know, he's doing very, very well in his career and he has a lot of responsibility and he's been on the forefront of a lot of the AI changes in the medical space. And
wow, that's cool.
Yeah. So he's a pretty cool dude.
All right.
But yet he is one of the most humble humans that you are ever going to meet. And no matter what he's got going on, when you're talking to him, he is all there. And he never complains. So I have a very high bar to live up to.
Amazing. Thanks for sharing that. Lauren, quick fire questions here. We've got a few minutes left. One, is there a book that you're currently reading or that you've read recently that you would recommend from a business or a personal development or sales point of view?
The books that I typically recommend that are always good to go back and reread, one is Atomic Habits.
Yeah, that's one of my favorites.
I'm pretty sure everybody's read it at that point, but go back and read it. It's very good. The other one is Hug Your Customers. It's also
I don't know that book.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's also a really good one.
Tech stack. People always want to know what tech tools are you using that, you know.
So yes, my tech stack. So when I got started, again, the great thing about recruiting is as long as you have a phone and you have internet, technically that's all you really need.
True.
So when we got started, we bootstrapped it. I mean, that was part of the fun challenge of why I wanted to start it selfishly is because I wanted to bootstrap this from the beginning. I wanted to test out all my theories that I had talked about to see if they would work. So we bootstrapped it, and when we first started out, I didn't have an ATS. I had email. I had a second line on my cell phone. And what we used for our ATS was Airtable.
Okay,
which,
wow.
Yep. Which is basically, if people don't know what that is, it's basically Excel on steroids, sort of. So, I mean, our overhead was great. It was basically zero for the first year. We have grown up a little bit and we now have an ETS. We have Recruit CRM. It's working pretty well for us. But I mean, yeah, I keep it real, real simple. We should work on a couple more. I am working, dipping my toes in the water on a few things. But yeah, I mean, it's still pretty straightforward and simple.
Okay. But keep it simple. I like that. And so apart from Recruit CRM, is there anything else that you're using either, you know, like what type of LinkedIn account do you use?
We have LinkedIn Recruiter, but we didn't use LinkedIn Recruiter for the longest time. We kind of earned ourselves the rights to use LinkedIn Recruiter after I got a couple of sales. I mean, there's a lot of mixed feelings about LinkedIn Recruiter as far as how much it costs and what the ROI really is there. We do have it now, so I have that. And then obviously we use ChatGPT for a lot of stuff. Again, grammar is not my strong suit. That's become my best friend.
Yeah, totally. What are you doing with AI in terms of business? How are you using it on a day-to-day basis?
I use it a lot for editing things or rewriting emails, summarizing things. I've been playing around with it for the like candidate summaries. I still haven't found like the perfect way that I wanted to write it out yet. And then, you know, just some other, the basic things like posts and stuff like that.
Okay. So content, summarizing, writing emails.
I still write a lot of my stuff and then yes. I have it edited because I want it to sound like me. I don't want it to sound, you know, very canned because you
exactly.
can tell.
Exactly.
I don't care what people say. You can tell.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Listen, I've really enjoyed this. Thank you so much for coming on the show and, excited to hear how things progress from here. And your big trip to Alaska sounds spectacular.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah, awesome. But we'll hopefully speak again before that actually happens. So, Lauren, thank you.
Thanks for having me. It's a good time.
All right, take care. Thank you for listening to The Resilient Recruiter. I know how busy recruiters are, so I'm honored that you're investing this time with me each week. I don't take your attention for granted. That's why I'm going all out to deliver value for you here, real insights you can apply to improve your business. And if you really want to help me to reach a wider audience and impact more people, please consider leaving the show a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you leave me a review, please reach out and let me know so I can thank you personally. Please hit the subscribe button and I'll see you next time.